Hello and welcome to the first quarter podcast for Weatherby Resources. It's 2020 and we can hardly believe that, but we are glad to be here and we are glad to bring you this continued podcast. We started it last year and got some really good feedback from it. And I promise you that it's the guest and the information that they bring that's the most valuable. And so we will get into that in just a moment. But before we get into that, I do want to remind everybody of a resource that we have called the Hospice Compliance Network. And this is a great resource. It provides the members with a lot of just a variety of benefits that's focused exclusively on hospice compliance. And guys, you just can't really find that anywhere. There's a lot of resources that focus on home health and focus on home health and hospice, but we are the only ones that focus exclusively on hospice compliance. The annual membership is only $1,250 a year, $1,250 a year. And in that membership, you get monthly webinars by Weatherby and hospice experts. You also get a compliance hotline available all the time, and that is a recommendation by the OIG, by the way, that can help cover the base for you there. You also get quarterly roundtable moderated by a healthcare attorney. I think that's really valuable. Quarterly podcasts like this one, like the one you're about to hear. And then the HCN, the Hospice Compliance Forum, and that includes regulatory and consulting reference center. And it also includes, and I think this is huge, a forum resource library of member shared documents. And again, you won't get that anywhere else either. In addition, two more things. You get 15% discount on all boot camp registrations. And by the way, there's one coming up in New Orleans, March the 9th through the 10th. And then you get 25% discount on all Weatherby products that you see on our webpage. So for more information about any of this, you can go to weatherbyresources.com. You just simply click on the Hospice Compliance Network button, which is in the upper right corner, and then you will get all the information that you need to join and begin to enjoy these resources. So today in the podcast, we're going to talk about something that I became really familiar with, gosh, several years ago. I guess it's been about 10 years ago now, because I started with the hospice that I was working for. We had a palliative care program, and so I did a lot of the research and got to do a lot of the sales training to help our salespeople go out and talk about what palliative care is and really what the difference in palliative care and hospice is. And our guest is going to tell us more about that. But today we have Barbara Sutton with us, and she is with House Call Providers. Barbara has a long history of healthcare because when she was only 4 years old, she made her first house call with her dad. Now, she wanted to be a veterinarian to begin with, but clearly she's on our podcast, so we don't think that happened. And we're talking about human care here. She did become an RN, and while working in a hospital, she began to really see that doctors were not managing people's pain well, and that, and generally in the communication between doctors and patients, the delivery of bad news that sometimes has to come, they weren't doing that very well either. So Barbara launched out. She went to grad school, and she had an opportunity to work with mobile medical care out of a local hospital there. That was a temporary position to begin with, became a full-time management position and clinical work. When that program unfortunately closed, she approached a local nonprofit hospice to find a new home for her 300 patients. So it all kind of kept continuing on. One move kind of led to another, and she started a community-based palliative care program in another county, and it grew to over 500 patients and a lot of staff. So they focused on teamwork, and they provided, and this is so important, they provided symptom management, support, and guidance, and they had those difficult combinations again. She moved again and combined her hospital-based knowledge with her community-based palliative care knowledge. and that's what she's doing now. She is on the board of directors for the American Academy of Home Care Medicine, and she's had many opportunities to present all the things that she's done. So she really is an expert in this field. So we get to pick Barbara's brain today about all of this. Welcome, Barbara.
Well, thank you very much. You make me sound extremely impressed. I am so glad to be here. Thank you.
Yes, we are glad to have you. We sure are. So I'm just going to launch right in with some questions that we have about palliative care, and just kind of tell us a little bit more about this. First of all, the obvious question that I got asked whenever, you know, trying to explain this to clinicians in the field, what's the difference? What is the difference between palliative care and hospice?
Certainly, and it always astounds me that somehow when other providers who aren't familiar with palliative care and with hospice will sometimes refer to palliative care when they mean hospice, as if palliative care is easier to say, confuses me sometimes. But hospice is actually an insurance terminology and a payment issue. To be eligible for hospice, two physicians, they don't want nurse practitioners like myself, two physicians need to certify that a patient is likely to die within the next 6 months if their terminal illness continues along its normal expected course. And the patient or their representative has to sign a document saying they understand that insurance will no longer pay for curative or life-prolonging treatment. Palliative care actually is recommended to start at the time of serious a cancer diagnosis. The NCCN guidelines actually say in their very, very extensive online guidelines that bring in palliative care for lung cancers, breast cancer, uterine, they go through many, many cancers, bring palliative care in alongside full treatment. Palliative care is providing pain and symptom management. That's huge, especially in this day and age of the opioid crisis and the fears that many prescribers have in managing pain. It's complex. A good palliative care team can work from many different aspects and angles to provide that pain and symptom management. And while the cardiologist, oncologist, nephrologist to handle the disease process itself in collaboration, of course, working as a team together. And then, two, it can be very, very difficult for an oncologist or a cardiologist or any of the other specialists to talk about the fact that this is a terminal illness. Dementia is terminal, but we've managed to prolong people's lives for a long time. But there are many decision points during exacerbations and hospitalizations that people really benefit from being able to think about and have previously thought about what to do if I experience pneumonia in dementia, or mom all of a sudden can't swallow because of her dementia and they're asking about a feeding tube, or your heart failure then, or untreated hypertension then leads into a need for dialysis. What are your choices? And making a decision at that time of crisis, in hospitals tends to always be a time of crisis, is so difficult for people. And very difficult for a treating doctor to also bring that conversation up. Whereas I can go, especially in community-based palliative care, I can go in and sit down in somebody's bedroom or kitchen, at their kitchen table, and have these conversations when things are calm, they're in their own environment, they have family members surrounding them on the, you know, a conference call, so that we can have really strong conversations.
Right.
And my team
members. Barbara, I have always felt like in dealing with this over the years that, you know, there were so many people that kind of fell through the gap that didn't qualify for hospice but needed some of the services, especially, like you said, the pain and symptom management. And I just feel like the true palliative care programs are filling that gap today, and a lot of these people are getting services before they do qualify for hospice. Do you feel that way? It's kind of a stopgap measure?
It can be. And working with communities, other community services can be really important because there are people, and I'll think of an example in another practice in another state of a young woman who was very abruptly diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. And the palliative care team that I was working with at the time took her on and kept her out of hospice for 3 years, kept her in active treatment for 3 years, managed to get her medication so that she could go to the Bahamas twice in those 3 years to have vacation with her small children. And hospice was absolutely the wrong thing to do because she wanted to treat and did until very shortly before her death. And with the combination of home health care to help manage symptoms, we found out, our social worker found a children's program for her kids, the palliative care team, the treating oncologist. We were able to bring together a huge amount of help for her and her husband and her small children.
Yeah.
The problem with palliative care, because it's mostly fee-for-service, is that we can't provide a homemaker, the certified nursing assistant, in the 24/7 visit access. So that's where we bring in our community teams, which was so important to help the palliative care process.
Right. And that's huge. I mean, something you said in that bit right there, you said that it people can continue treatment. And so I think that's one of the keys to palliative care, too, is that you can get the pain and symptom management. And you referenced cancer patients a couple of times, especially for cancer patients, but continue to get the treatment, which is very important. Tell us where's palliative care provided?
Palliative care can be provided in the hospital. It can be provided in a physician's office. There's some oncology and cardiology offices that I know here who have an embedded palliative care practitioner. I do community-based palliative care, so I make house calls to private homes, assisted living facilities, and have in the past gone to skilled nursing facilities as well, not currently doing it. So it can really be provided in quite a few sites, in clinics as well.
Right. Okay. Are there, I've heard of consultative palliative care. Isn't there another type? Tell us about the two types of palliative care.
So there's actually co-management as well, which would be, it is an example of somebody, and we fall back to oncology patients very frequently, because they have a huge burden of pain and symptoms, both from the disease and from the treatment. So you can partner with an oncologist and develop that trusting relationship, that's very, very important, so that a palliative care team can manage the pain and symptoms and take complete management over those medications and treatments while the oncologist manages the chemotherapy and whatever is appropriate from that way. So we co-manage the patient. We're having another specialist, the palliative care team, and just as if that oncology patient also was on dialysis and needed a nephrologist involved. We co-manage those symptoms alongside the treatments.
Yeah. And honestly, I have never thought until you said just now and just a moment ago, you referenced dialysis patients. And I've never thought about palliative care for dialysis, but that makes perfect sense.
A couple of years ago, there was a wonderful series of articles, I believe in the New York Times, about dialysis for older patients. And I don't remember the year even, but it actually started out with how many older dialysis patients, active dialysis patients, actually wondered aloud, how did I get here?
Yeah.
I don't like this. And that's that decision point when, the numbers are starting to go bad, that is really a good time to be having those conversations about, is dialysis something you want as part of your life, and this is what it looks like. And I'm not here to tell you yes or no what you should do. I want you to have the information of what's good about it, what's bad about it.
Right. It's funny because my niece is about to, she's a semester away from graduating with her RN, and then she wants to continue on. But last Friday, she and I were at lunch, and her clinical that day was in a dialysis center. And it made her very sad. She'd never been to a dialysis center, and she'd never experienced that. And she said, Aunt Melanie, she said, I like it, and I like talking to the people, but that's really a sad place. They're hooked up on that, and they have to come 3 times a week. I mean, she was telling me all about that. So, it's funny that happened last Friday, and now we're talking about palliative care as a possible solution. Or not solution, but certainly a help for that.
So. A help. And nephrologists of the dialysis clinics, of course, there are, just like hospitals, everybody's paying the bills and, you know, trying to make a good living off of things as well. So they're not terribly interested in always having these conversations with people about, you know, the struggles. You can go online and research what dialysis looks like. What's it going to be like to be on dialysis?
Right.
It's all sunshine and roses and unicorns and rainbows.
Yeah.
It's, you know, where's the reality you're hearing about? And some people may absolutely want to do that, may want to trial it for a while, or may say absolutely not.
Right.
But they need the information up front.
That's right.
Real
yeah.
information.
No, that makes perfect sense. So tell me, you mentioned a few moments ago, too, one of the ways that palliative care is reimbursed is fee-for-service. Is there any other way that it's reimbursed?
There are some per-patient, per-month programs. So some insurance companies will work with an organization, or hospital systems will work with a group providing palliative care in order to pay additional fees, say $100 per patient per month to keep them on the palliative care service, because they realize the investment of having a palliative care program, having these conversations, managing pain and symptoms, and avoiding those very expensive hospitalizations or emergency room visits for uncontrolled symptoms, for acute, the end of life care. How many people go into the hospitals, into the emergency rooms, because they're actually actively dying, but nobody knows what to do about it.
Okay.
Because there hasn't been anybody in the home
right.
supporting the family or the staff. And this is what's getting ready to happen. And if hospice isn't the right thing, you can respond to that, educating everybody around that person so that they don't necessarily have to go to the ER. But, you know, insurance companies don't like paying that. There are a couple of community-based for-profit community-based palliative care programs who work primarily with insurance. I mean, they contract with insurance companies to provide palliative care to their high utilizer patients.
Okay. Now, I think most everybody listening to this podcast is going to be really familiar with who is on the team from a hospice perspective. We kind of know that matrix. But what does it look like for palliative care? Who's providing that care?
So usually more than half are being palliative care is being provided by advanced practice nurses, physician assistants. There are quite a few physicians, but because the reimbursement isn't incredibly wonderful yet, that's a little bit of a problem. So if a system is paying a salary, they're kind of interested in paying for the nurse practitioner, PAs, of course. Social workers are the only other members of the team who are billable. And social workers are vital for a team. I'd love it if they reimburse for chaplains, but they don't. I have been fortunate to work for organizations who have seen the importance of chaplains. Uh-huh. So I've had the availability of a chaplain everywhere I've been. But again, that's never reimbursed.
Right.
It's really, really, really important to have a really strong office staff, because somebody with you know, serious illness, very ill, homebound, and a high symptom burden needs to have somebody to be at the end of the phone 24/7. And that's, again, hard, especially if a practice isn't well supported. A physician or a nurse practitioner on call 24/7.
Okay.
Not necessarily for visits, but with electronic prescribing and things to be able to, you know, do that. And again, that can be where home health can be very helpful. And because most of them have to have 24/7 response of some kind. So being able to partner with a good team.
Yeah.
In an ideal world, we'd have everybody reimbursable.
Right.
Not ideal, but no.
Yeah. And we can dream, and maybe that comes, right?
Yeah.
That comes next, maybe.
Goals.
Well, tell us, just kind of in closing, Barbara, tell us, you and I had talked about some resources. Tell us some of those.
Yes.
And then, guys, what we'll do is, everybody listening, we'll have the links and the information about these resources. Whenever we send you the podcast, you'll get that information as well. But tell us about some resources.
So the two that I really enjoy working with, because they're very, very interdisciplinary, are the American Academy of Home Care and Medicine, who I am on the board. I'm actually the secretary, and we are much more inclusive than we have been to different professions. We've got an occupational therapist on the board. We're working to get a social worker on the board. It's made up primarily of physicians, a few nurse practitioners, but of board members right now, but that's a wonderful, smallish professional organization who's really seeking to expand the region to getting into people's homes, home care medicine. There's been much more push on addressing palliative care needs as well, because the overlap between primary care home and palliative care home is huge. So we're the people who aren't as aware of palliative care in the home medicine field are learning a great deal about it. They're learning that they know more than they thought they did. Mm-hmm. And the Center to Advanced Palliative Care, also known as CAPSI, is another terrific organization that is all about palliative care, and they have huge number of resources. There's a workbook on starting the community-based palliative care program, lots of resources embedded within CAPSI's website. Some are member-only accessible. Others are available for the general public. It is an organizational membership, so it depends on the size of your organization, what subscription cost is.
Sure.
And CAPSI and the Academy of Home Care Medicine are actually starting to work together, which is another benefit.
Okay, great.
And having some kind of crossover for memberships as well.
Absolutely. Well, okay, I know this has been a 30,000 foot view, and there's a whole lot more we could say about palliative care, but hopefully this gives everybody a little bit of information to start into looking further into it if they're interested and have not done that to this point. But Barbara, we appreciate your time so much.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope people can tell I'm very excited about palliative care, very passionate, and I love to share the information that I have and gathered, and I would be open to anybody contacting me as well.
Okay. All right, Barbara, thank you so much. And guys, don't forget about the Hospice Compliance Network opportunity. Just go to weatherbyresources.com. And then also don't forget there's a boot camp coming up March the 9th and 10th. And it's in a really fun place. It's in New Orleans. And so you guys sign up for that and go have some fun down there and learn a little bit from our team as well. But we will be back. So it's February. We will be back in April with our Q2 podcast. So we will talk to you guys then. Thank you so much.
Thank you.